Today I'll be talking about our work on finding name resolution vulnerabilities in programs. And I'm Haiwath, and this is joint work done with my colleague Joshua Schiffman and my advisor Trent Jaeger, and we are from the SIS lab at Penn State. So the first question everyone asks when I talk to them about this project is, what do you do with DNS? So I want to make it clear, therefore, that DNS is not the namespace we are dealing with in this work. So we are looking at the namespaces that are controlled by the operating system, for example, the file system. So what does the file system namespace enable? So processes apply file names, for example, here var mail root, and the name server will go through the namespace. In this case, the name server for the file system namespace is the operating system. It will go through the namespace bindings and finally give back the resource corresponding to the file name. Now, name resolution, or rather the indirection offered by namespaces, is invaluable because programmers obviously cannot refer to the resources by the inode number, and so they use the name instead. However, using the name instead of the direct resource that they want can cause problems, and we shall see how. So security problems are caused because adversaries share parts of the file system namespace or any other namespace along with higher integrity victim processes. So these adversary processes can attempt to subvert the victim process resolutions. So for example, here I have the permissions for the var mail directory. So we'll use this as a running example throughout the talk. So var mail has permissions for group mail to both create and delete files. Now, the users in the group mail are surely not as high integrity as the administrators, or rather the root. So there exists some sharing here which might lead to some problems. So what problems exactly might happen? So we broadly classify attacks on name resolution into two categories. The first one is the probably the better known improper binding attacks. In improper binding attacks, the adversary uses the binding in order to redirect the victim process to an unexpected resource. So usually in this case, the victim process expects to get a lower integrity resource and ends up with a higher integrity resource. So here, the victim process running as root opens var mail root and expects to get that file. But meanwhile, the adversary who is running as the group mail or the user mail will change this root into a binding, into a link to some other file that he does not have access to. So this is, in effect, a confused deputy problem. So when root actually resolves, it will not get the file it wants, but end up with a different file. So this is probably well known, and it is caused by symbolic link and hard links. On the other hand, you also have this category of improper resource attacks, where the attacker uses his control of the end resource, not the bindings in between. So here, it usually is the case that the victim expects to get a higher integrity resource, but ends up with a lower integrity resource. So examples of these are untrusted search paths, or file squatting, or IPC squatting, things like this. So here you see the victim again trying to open file, and our adversary steps in. And what it does is it replaces the final resource. So it changes, it rather deletes that file, replaces it with its own file because it has permissions. And so when the victim process accesses this, it will end up accessing the file that is controlled by mail instead of its own inbox. So what the obvious defense is to check for properties of the file before you use them. So I want, for example, I can check the owner, or I can check whether the file is a symbolic link or a hard link. And this again leads to more problems because there are race conditions. So these are the well-known time of check to use attacks. So here, the victim process checks for a property of the file. So it does an LSTAT, and it looks for whether root is a symbolic link. And everything seems fine. So it goes ahead to open the file. But meanwhile, the attacker can get scheduled, and the attacker can do his malicious thing. He can simply replace it with a link. And so unfortunately, in spite of checking, the victim process ends up with another file that it didn't want. So how serious a problem are these? So obviously, if an attacker is able to launch these attacks, he should be on the local system. He should have local access. And people can say, well, computers today are just single user, so no one else is there on the computer apart from yourself. So who is going to launch such attacks? However, you do have multi-user environments still, like in a university where you have students and you have the administrator. And moreover, so these students can try to become the administrator. Or more realistically, you download malware or some server program that you have is broken into. And this usually does not give root permissions, but once you become a local attacker, the adversary further tries to escalate privileges to root. And these occur at the rate of, say, 5 to 10% of the CV entries each year, so they are a serious problem. And they are particularly hard to fix, these name resolution problems, because it involves various parties. So the programmers write code to check, which itself is hard. But moreover, the programmers have little idea of the access control policy in the system that their program is deployed on. And it is the OS distributors, actually, who determine the access control policy and not the programmers. And so there might be a disconnect between the expectations of the programmer and the distributor. And finally, you have the admins who configure the system, and they may do it wrongly as well. So what are the defenses that have been proposed for this thus far? So this is an old attack, and realizing this, the system call API for Linux has been extended in various ways in order for programs to translate their expectations into the OS. So you have, for example, in the open system call, the O underscore exclusive and O underscore nofollow flags that make sure or that constrains the name resolution in some ways. However, programmers are human, humans make mistakes, and it is not always that they'll write perfect code. And as we've already seen, this is made harder by the fact that programmers don't know the access control of the OS in which their program is deployed in. So you have this code. This is actually from the GNU mail utils suite. So here you have the programmer who's gone into a lot of trouble to check for various things. But this is very difficult, and it often does not work. On the other hand, you can defend this from the system. So many defenses, especially for time of check to use attacks, have been proposed and broken. And Tsai in Oakland 2009 showed that these defenses are fundamentally limited because they lack some insight into the program. And so Chari et al. Had this very nice paper in NDSS 2010 that proposed a system defense for improper binding attacks. But however, they too have false positives. So looking at the state of art, looking at how difficult defense is, we are proposing a different spin. We say we have to find these name resolution vulnerabilities in programs as they are deployed in a system, and then fix them before adversaries can exploit them. So we can either fix the code, or you can fix the access control policy. So of course, finding these problems also has prior work. And so there is both static and dynamic analysis. So in static analysis, you look at the program code and try to find statically the vulnerable name resolution calls. However, first of all, this is very difficult because there are no standardized checks that have been proposed to defend against these problems, and therefore they are mainly limited to time of check to use attacks. and they have false positives. So this is the main problem, because not all of these name resolutions need to be defended in the program. Only the subset that is actually accessible to an adversary needs to be defended. And the static analysis has no knowledge of the system's access control policy, and so it will lead to a large number of false positives. So here, the victim opens var mail root, and the mail directory is accessible to an adversary. So this has to be defended. But if the victim actually accesses etc host, in any sane configuration, you would expect etc to not be arbitrarily modifiable. And so it does not need to check. But static analysis does not know this. So it will lead to false positives. And in fact, our runtime study found only a minuscule portion of all the name resolutions actually accessible to adversaries. And in runtime analysis, on the other hand, you have access to both the access control policy and the system calls. So you can probably do a better job. However, there are still many false positives, because the program code might defend itself against these attacks. In fact, you would expect that most code defends itself properly, because they've been around for a long time. And manual audits are impractical. So if a runtime analysis just tells you where adversary accessibility is, and you go through each case, then it's going to be very difficult, because if we knew how to do this, we'd not have these problems in any case. So you don't know whether this is fine or not. So in our study, we found only 13% of all the name resolutions that were accessible to an adversary were actually vulnerable. And in addition, false negatives might result in normal runtime. So that is, of course, the coverage problem, but I'm not talking about that. So the name resolutions have to be launched in an adversarial situation to analyze whether the program can defend itself. So for example, you might have to launch the program in an untrusted directory, and so on. So this also is not taken care of by runtime analysis. So in our solution, we aim to enhance this runtime analysis to actively change the namespace to create these adversarial scenarios and look at how programs respond. So we take inspiration from gray box testing. So in gray box testing, you have a victim program. It is fed with adversarial input, and then later you detect how the program responds. So as an example, for like SQL injection attacks, you can give this string to the victim, and if it ends up doing the vulnerable access, then you know it's a problem. So we attempt to do something similar for detecting name resolution attacks. And so here, our main insight is that you can use the operating system itself to be the test engine. You can both generate adversarial input and study the program response. So a victim makes a name resolution call. The OS itself modifies the namespace in ways an adversary would. And then later, it looks at the response of the program to see if it accepted the resource. However, there are several missing things here. So firstly, it is not one victim process that's running, but there are so many processes running on the system. And by using the OS as a test engine, you can uniformly cover all of these programs. You can check everything. So next, as we've seen, you should only launch an attack when the name resolution is, in fact, accessible to an adversary. And for this, we use the access control policy, which is also available to the OS. And then how do you manage your test cases? So you launch an attack, and then what happens the next time you come to that same name resolution again? Do you launch an attack again? That would be meaningless, because you've already tested it. So how do you track the attacks you've done? So for this, we have some sort of a history that maintains our test cases. And then further, you know when a program accepts a resource. Like it'll open it, and then it'll do a write or a read operation from it. So that's obvious. But what about rejection? When can you say a program has rejected a resource? And then finally, after you've launched all your cases, what do you do? Do you just leave the namespace as you've modified it? That might destroy data and whatever. So you have to somehow roll back the namespace. So we call the, we broadly classify the first part as the launch phase, and then we have the detect phase in order to detect problems. So I'll go through both of these quickly. So in the launch phase, you have the victim making a call, and so first you have to find the bindings that are used in this call. So you look at the bindings. Next, you see which of these are accessible to an adversary, during which you will also find a suitable adversary, and then you will actually launch the attack. So for each of the attacks, we have a behavior of the adversary hard-coded into our test engine. And so this is the behavior for a symbolic link attack, which just deletes the root file and makes it into a symbolic link. And the attack is launched. And then finally, you let the victim continue and see later what it does. So in the detect phase, you see here that the victim is attempting to write to the file descriptor, and therefore it is vulnerable. So you record this vulnerability, and then you roll back the namespace. And you restart the system call so that the victim continues running as if nothing had happened. So, of course, these are details of those steps. So finding the bindings accessed, we do it through a shadow resolution, which extracts the name resolution code from system calls outside before the call begins, so we can actually find out adversary accessibility. And to find the adversary accessibility, we use the access control policy. We have models for discretionary and mandatory access control. So for discretionary, we just say any other user apart from yourself and root is a victim. And then you launch the attack. This is very difficult because the existing data has to be backed up, right? You simply cannot delete the file. Moreover, some things like Unix domain sockets and other special files cannot be deleted, cannot be recovered once they are deleted. And the attack also should only be visible to the subset of processes for which the adversary is actually an attacker and not to all processes. So how do we solve this problem? Our solution is to look at union file systems. So union file systems combine union two file systems together. They have a lower, so this is typically used in live CD-ROM images where you have the read-only lower file system and you have the upper read-write file system. So here you have the read-only file system. Whenever you want to modify this file, it is copied up to the upper file system, and that is where the actual modification takes place. So we adapt this to our scenario, and we say that the adversary can modify only the upper branch, and the original file system is left as such in the lower branch. So you have here the adversary and the victim is redirected depending on the adversary model. And in addition, certain system calls, like stat, have to present a good version of the resource. They shouldn't present the malicious version. Otherwise, you can't detect these races. And so these system calls like stat are simply redirected to the lower branch, so they'll see the good version. And managing the attacks, we identify uniquely name resolution points in program code using this concept of program entry points. So program entry points are nothing but the point in the user space stack where the program calls the library. So here you have a.out, it calls libc, and this point is the program entry point. So this is a bit difficult because many programs are not compiled with frame pointers, but we use certain techniques to obtain this. And in addition, we've extended this to interpreters, where the interpreter stack trace is insufficient. What you want is the program or the script and file and number. And then you detect the vulnerability. And here, acceptance is fairly straightforward, but for rejection, we've seen two behaviors of programs. Programs either retry the same name resolution call, or they simply exit because they know something is wrong. And this is how we detect rejection. And these are the accept calls for the various attacks. So you can see they are different, they're not the same. And finally, we have the rollback. And during the rollback, we have to roll back the namespace. So that just involves wiping the resource from the upper branch. And we recover the process. So if the process retries at the same entry point, we don't need to do anything, because we already have launched an attack there, and our history will not allow us to launch an attack again. But for those that exit, we currently simply just restart the process, so it can simply continue running. And we are looking at integrating Linux checkpointing and rollback mechanisms for this. So in this way, our tool is able to perform online. So you can deploy the system, do your normal tasks, and we will test you automatically. So we've deployed this, or rather, we've implemented this for Linux 2.6 and 3. And for Ubuntu and Fedora distributions, we actually have a package. And so once installed, the main thing here is that we automatically test any action you do. So you don't need to set up special like fuzzing environments or whatever. We do everything for you, because we are doing it from the operating system. So looking at the results, we found 26 vulnerabilities, of which actually 5 were previously known but unfixed. So we found problems in both old and new programs. We found, actually, interestingly, several vulnerabilities due to these special users, like message bus and MySQL and so on. So these present a problem, because if you have a MySQL server and that gets compromised, then the attackers can escalate their privileges to root. And of course, some are known but unfixed, surprisingly. And so looking at the vulnerabilities by the entry point, we had like thousands of resolutions, of which only around 5% in Fedora and Ubuntu were actually accessible to adversaries. And of these ones that were accessible, only further a minuscule portion were actually vulnerable. So if you were to do a manual analysis, then it would be really impossible. You need tools like this. And so I'll go into some interesting cases. So our system can actually detect time of check to time of use races, because it deterministically does this inside the operating system. So it blocks before every system call, and it can change the namespace as it wants. So we found this in a startup script, actually hc initd x11 common, if I'm not mistaken. So here, it tries to move a certain directory out of the way and then create a directory for the X server socket. But our system found that if the adversary does this action, creates a link, then you can end up changing anything to like read everyone. So read or write. So this could be used to append entries to the password or shadow file, for example. And Sting creates scenarios that do not occur at normal runtime. So we found this problem in Mount All, where the adversary had to do a very specific set of tasks. He had to create a link. And the victim also had to launch this mount process in an untrusted directory. And if so, we found that the certain entries in the mTab can be compromised. So this is an example where a normal runtime would give no clue as to these attacks, and Sting actually creates these scenarios. And then coming back to our favorite example, this programmer has taken so much effort to defend against various attacks. So he defends against a squat during create, he checks for a symbolic link, he checks for race conditions and hard links, but unfortunately he misses a case where the file already exists. And so this can be used, for example, to spoof the mailbox of root. So any user in the group mail can actually end up doing this. So this shows how manual analysis is insufficient, and we need something automated. And the most important thing I feel that we found is this, as I already told you, the disconnect between programmers and operating system developers. So we contacted a few developers about these vulnerabilities. And one developer actually said I'm not going to fix my code because it is not my problem. It is the operating system's access control policy that is wrong. And we felt this was fair. In fact, we found a couple of other vulnerabilities too that seemed better fixed in the operating system access control rather than inside the program. And so this is this shows the need for greater cooperation between the programmers and the distributors. And so for the performance, we did notice some overhead, like noticeable overhead, but it was not too bad. We were still able to carry out tests. The overhead was around 8%. We are looking to improve it. We don't believe this is really that important because we are not going to use this in production systems, but on test systems to find problems. So in conclusion, name resolution is a fundamental process, but it has long been vulnerable to these problems. And we propose Sting, which is a system-wide online tool that finds these name resolutions in vulnerabilities in programs. And we found 21 previously unknown ones. And actually, on continuing our tests, we've actually found a few more in the latest version of Ubuntu. And so the most important lesson is we feel that there needs to be a greater cooperation between OS distributors and programmers. And finally, I have this available, but it's well, rather restricted access. So if you would like to use this tool on your system, please contact me. So we have a package and all that, so it shouldn't be difficult to install at all. So with that, I finish, and thank you. I'm ready for questions.
Time for a couple of questions. There must be some questions.
Hey, Deskin Miller from Microsoft. So Windows has this thing called private namespaces where you can put kernel objects in ACLed namespaces that you have to actually have access to in order to open the object. Have you looked at similar things? I mean, obviously, it's different from the adversarial detection, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. So the thing is, private namespaces do, of course, exist in a variety of OSs. But the thing is, for functionality, high integrity processes must interact with low integrity ones, and they have to protect themselves when they do. So that's what we are looking at.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank the speaker again.